Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week, New York State Assemblyman Jim Todisco. Welcome, my old friend, Jim Todisco.
It's great to be here, and I am your old friend. I'm getting older every minute.
Both of us are. How would you analyze the way the just-completed legislative session went?
Unremarkable. You know, a mixed bag. We passed the third on-time budget in a row. It was fairly well balanced. We had a little bit of concern because, the governor and the legislature over the last 2 years leading into this year were doing pretty well in moving in a very positive direction other than what we've seen at the federal government. The governor led the way in many instances, but we were there with him. There was an altered reality before that we always had a revenue problem. And as a liberal, as you would say, progressive governor, you would think, his father, Mario, was also, you would think he would not move in another direction to suggest that sometimes it's a taxing and spending problem in New York State and a mandate problem in New York State for local municipalities, constituents, small businesses. So we moved away from that altered reality and this year passed the third balanced budget. But the spending priorities were a little miscued this year. As you know, they tried to eliminate $90 million from the developmentally disabled. And I got up on the floor with several of my colleagues. In fact, we put an amendment on there to suggest, look, any budget, no matter how fiscally responsible you want to be and stay within the realm of spending and have a spending cap, has to start with those who are most in need of assistance and funding. And the developmentally disabled, many of us felt, were in that category. And, you know, I like Jimmy Fallon, and we heard all that business about Jimmy Fallon and the tax credits, and he was going to come to New York and put the show on, and we had to give, I don't know if it was $5 million, and we had $415 million of tax credits.
Oh, this is for the Tonight Show.
For the Tonight Show. And $415 million in tax credits for the rich and famous from Beverly Hills. And I got up on the floor, and I said, to your point about sometimes tongue-in-cheek, I said, look, I like Jimmy Fallon. I went to the same college Jimmy Fallon went to. I went to the College of St. Rose. He went on to become a great comedian. I went on to be a special education teacher. Some people would think I also became a comedian, but that's not the case, of course, but some people would suggest that. But to take $415 million and $5 million for tax credits, and don't get me wrong, I think it's exciting to have movies come in. We had one in Schenectady, The Pines. I enjoyed the movie, but they come in. They help the restaurants, they help the hotels, they create a few jobs, spend some money, help the economy, but then they leave. Mm-hmm. My feeling was if you're going to give tax credits to anybody, give them to the small businesses who are going to create 40 to 60% of the new jobs. But above and beyond that, it's no joke to take $90 million from the developmentally disabled and give tax credits to the rich and famous from Beverly Hills. And as you know, our good friend Assemblyman Weinstein was able to get that money back with the help of many of us. He went to the governor and he said, look, this cannot stand. And we did get that $90 million back. So we felt validated on our side of the aisle because, of course, we put the hostile amendment on the floor and felt to suggest to some of those people who think, well, we only care about the one percenters and the rich business people. No, you know, it was our amendment on the floor to get that $90 million back to the developmentally disabled. So in that sense, we took a step backwards, but we came forth after that. But not much was created or took place this year.
The governor has been accused of having been, as you suggest, moderate conservative, especially on fiscal issues in the first 2 years of his incumbency, but that there's been a marked change this third year that he's become, you know, more aggressive about burnishing his liberal credentials, perhaps because he's theoretically taking up where his father left off and, you know, looking at the presidency.
Yeah, he tacked to the left without question. He suggested we're going to look at the scientific information as it relates to fracking. Now, I don't know if you just saw the recent report, and I'm not sure one way or another on that. I would love to see the jobs created by it, but that recent report that came out just the other day from a pretty valid organization suggested that the fracking takes place so deep into the ground, it's nowhere near the water level.
Who paid for that one? Not the industry, was it, by any chance?
I have no idea, really. Okay, but yeah. They suggested it was a fairly reliable one, as best nonpartisan as you can get. But that doesn't mean that it can't happen to our water supply. Mm-hmm. What we're waiting for is really for the ENCON, the Environmental Conservation Committee for the state of New York, to give us the best possible report they can give us.
How come it's taken so long?
I think politics.
I think it's political.
I think they're holding it back. As you know, they're trying to pass a moratorium in both houses to hold it off for several years to get two or three different areas.
Well, your house, I think they've already passed.
They've passed it. It hasn't been able to pass the Senate. So he tacked a little bit to the left.
That's a sailing term. You a sailor, are you?
Well, not really. I can row a kayak, but I can't get it on top of the car to get it to where I want to go. It's too heavy.
I got you.
But you know, in those instances, and many of us were there willing to support 9 out of 10 of the Women's Equality Act, and we think it's a shame that we left without.
And the only one that you weren't willing to support was the abortion issue, the codifying of abortion.
That's a sensitive issue, and we're up for a separate debate on that. But why punish women when they could get better salaries, better access to jobs that are appropriate to them? And the sexual harassment piece on that was extremely important, especially what we see with the Speaker and Vito Lopez and things of that nature taking place.
Call him Gropez.
Well, yes, they've used that term, Mr. Gropez. And right now, though, it's like a triumvirate out there in the city. You got Vito Lopez, you got Spitzer, you got Wiener, and they all look like they're ahead in the polls. Yeah. So I'm not sure what's happening.
You mentioned Spitzer and Wiener. You're not for giving people a second chance, are you?
I'm for giving people a second chance, but I think he's had a second, third, fourth, and fifth chance. You see, it's not about Spitzer's or Wiener's private life. It's about their temperament. You know, I was the guy in the throughway where he said, look, I'm going to be an effing steamroller.
I remember that.
Roll over you and anybody else who gets in my way.
It's a very famous JT, James Taylor, song.
Right.
And you went and blabbed that he did that, didn't you? You went and told the
New York Times. Didn't.
Oh, you didn't?
Nope. One of my staff obviously did, because I had to go back as minority leader and say, look, I just want you to know I had an interaction with the governor, because he talked about transparency. He's going to be the most transparent government, but he wouldn't let me in the meetings. And finally, he let me in the meeting at a minority leader. We had a 5-way meeting. And now with this governor who promised transparency, we're down to 3, sometimes 2. Sometimes he's the Lone Ranger without even Tonto in the room.
Talking about a present governor.
Andrew, yeah. Andrew. Likes his way or the highway sometimes also. But the temperament thing, he went after Joe Bruno.
But wait. So you had Spitzer came after you when he was governor, and he said, get out of my way. I'm an effing steamroller, and I'm going to steamroll over. This is a James Taylor song.
Yeah, right.
And in fact, we played it, right, but we had to beep the effing thing out of there. Have you ever had contentious arguments with this governor?
No. Contentious argument. Of course, I'm not the minority leader now.
Yes.
But I've taken certain positions, and I have to tell you, he's been very good at taking the suggestions I give to him. For example, I put forth an idea for a Used Resources Accountability Act, where we, you know, at the end of the year, I found out what agencies were doing, was taking brand new furniture, brand new computers, and saying, well, these are no good, throwing them out so they could spend down all their budgetary money so they could at least get the same amount. I said, look, this is inappropriate. It should be evaluated by you and the comptroller, and they should be put on eBay. He created what he calls New York Store. New York Store puts these used resources on eBay.
Did he give you credit?
No, but that's okay.
You know, you're a really interesting guy. You are, because you come up with all these great ideas. People, if they're good, people tend to adopt them, but we never hear the Tedesco name attached to them because you're in the minority.
No, but you can't have a pride of authorship. You've got to be able.
Yes, you can. I haven't.
Well, some people do. I can't get my job done if I worry about getting my name on bills and getting credit for it. Take this digital bill we got now.
Yeah.
Everybody's talking about, oh, we got an important question on the ballot. It's casino gaming, and that's going to bring in money for education in the state. Well, probably the most important question we're going to have on the ballot is 2014. Should New York State go digital in terms of the legislation it puts on the desk of legislators? It's going to save projected $50 million.
I was going to say a gazillion dollars.
Yeah. The paper, the ink, the delivery, the waste disposal.
You'll put some people out of work, though, won't you?
Well, this is the point that people ask me. Our job is not to create public sector jobs. Our job is to help create private sector jobs. Our job is to create the best possible services
at the lowest cost. I'm with you. I think it's a great idea.
And I told the speaker and everybody, give those guys different jobs. You'll still save money even if you keep those guys.
You won't have the paper.
You won't have the paper. You won't. Mother Nature will be smiling, and Mother Earth.
People should know about the legislature. I mean, it's one of my earliest memories. I'm an old guy now, but I remember going up to those rooms with those old guys standing there, and the smell of all of the paper and all the stuff, having the ink and the paper, and having to, all of that would be gone. Why should we have it?
Yeah, it's still warm on the desk when it comes out, and we should be moving into the 21st century. If anybody wants a copy, all you need is a printing machine. You need one or two copies. If you go to look at the document rooms, you have hundreds and thousands of copies in these document rooms at a cost of millions of dollars. Now, the second bill we have is the other side of government, outside of the legislature. You know, our founding fathers were smart. They said you should be able to read the bills at least for 3 days to understand
right.
them.
And now we have something called a message of necessity.
Message of necessity, which the governor has used to quite an extent.
Remember that a message of necessity, I don't have to tell you, was invented so that if there was a tidal wave heading towards, you know, New York State,
you got it.
You could do away with those 3 days.
Yeah.
But now we use the message of necessity for a lot of things, don't we?
Well, last year it was the DNA legislation in the middle of the night. Last year it was the evaluation of teachers in the middle of the night.
Gun control.
Pension reform. Gun control. The first day of this year, SAFE Act in the middle of the night. Now, I got up on the phone and I said, look, armies use sleep deprivation to confuse their enemies. And if, you know, Bob Woodward said the worst thing we have to fear, from Watergate fame,
yeah.
He said the worst thing we have to fear is secret government because democracy in darkness dies. And he was absolutely right. All these things in the middle of the night are nice in terms of you want to be somebody who ramrods things through, but they impact democracy in the long run. The media should be there. The public should have the opportunity to watch if they want to and be there. And above all, we should be awake, being that check and balance that our founding fathers meant us to be, because they want us to look at that legislation for 3 days. I mean, look at the stimulus plan, a $1 trillion stimulus plan. Nobody read that thing on the federal government. It went from a jobs program to a snow jobs program. And the next year it was 15% unemployment. And we're working ourselves out of that now. But our job is to read, understand the legislation, and follow what our founding fathers wanted us to be.
Come on now, James. How many people in your party or any other parties read those bills?
Oh, I think quite a few of us do.
Really? You read the whole bill?
Well, we read the most significant portions, and then we use our counsels to counsel us on some that we don't quite understand. There's a lot of legalese in these writings.
I want to change the subject, if I may. First of all, you were the minority leader. You're not anymore. You did something that almost nobody does. You were the minority leader, and you said, okay, now I'm going to go and just be an assemblyman again. That's rare. Have you enjoyed that?
I'll tell you, I've enjoyed it immensely. Listen, the hardest job I ever had, besides coaching 12 basketball players and trying to get them to react as a team when I was an educator, I had a real job in an athletic coach, I was being the minority leader. I loved it, but it was a difficult job. I got to get in the room with Spitzer. I got to get in the room with Patterson. I got to get in the room with Pataki. I got to represent my 45 to 50 members in the room and a large portion of the public and move, I think, an agenda forward by getting in there. Because I was a bulldog about it. I felt
yes, you are.
If you're going to have transparency, you're going to let me in the room because we represent 5 to 6 million people. But the worst part of the job was raising the money to continue to help get our guys elected so we could move our agenda forward. There needs to be some type of reform. And you know what I feel is the most significant reform. It's recall, I think. I think New York State needs recall. Now, I know it's not perfect. It's not the end all and be all.
I agree with you.
Well, thank you for that.
I agree with you. So if somebody's doing a bad job, you know, call them back.
Yeah.
But also, what about initiative and referendum? Are you for those?
To a limited extent.
Be careful now.
Because here's why I say to a limited extent. You have 9 million people in New York City. They could control the entire state because they vote as a block. So I think you have to do it by congressional type of districts or by districts in terms of weighted vote and weighted opinion.
Well, for example, if you had initiative and referendum and you put on, you know, that you got a certain number of signatures and then you vote on it, whether or not there should be term limits for state legislators, I guarantee you it would take about 2.5 seconds to vote for that by people in New York State. So, yeah. Which is one of the reasons I suspect we're never going to have an initiative and referendum in New York State.
Oh, without question. And the reason why is because the leadership is so powerful. Dean Skelos, and let's face it, Speaker Silver, control any piece of legislation that comes to the floor. I mean, you can have, we've had bills, Jenna's Law, 149 members sponsored it and never came to the floor. Because the speaker, who has a little bit of a connection with the legal aspects, the attorneys, was not allowing it to come to the floor.
And remind us what Jenna's Law was.
Jenna's Law was a nurse here in Rensselaer who a violent felon was given probation the first time he was violent and let out of prison. Since then, we've passed legislation to not give probation in many instances to first-time violent felons. And he got out and he murdered her and raped her. And we passed a law to say, hey, if you're a first-time violent felon, you shouldn't get probation.
Yeah. Do you represent Saratoga?
80% of my district is in Saratoga, not the city of Saratoga now.
The reason I say that is there was a piece in the paper. You're Italian, aren't you?
Yeah.
There was a piece in the paper. There was a truck, a food truck, and it had the word Dago on it. And Saratoga, the race course, quite correctly, you know, kicked them out.
Wandering Dago,
Wandering Dago.
Wandering Dago.
You really wonder, at this stage of the game in our development, how that could have happened, that they would have been let in the first place?
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. But even though they were Italian, it is a derogatory term.
No question. You look in the dictionary, it's a derogatory
term. It's always been a derogatory term. And I know the N-word is used a lot between African-Americans.
Hey, I'm Jewish. Would I want the K-word on a truck?
No, absolutely not. And I think the smart thing for them to do would have been to yield and say, well, look, the state of New York didn't want my truck there. Let's change the name.
Let's do
something reasonable here. But yeah, it certainly impacted those of Italian and other people who just don't like to see that terminology.
How important is ethnocentricity in the legislature? In other words, ethnic groups. You see the Black and Puerto Rican caucus. You see there's an Irish caucus, I believe. How important is that in the way the legislature operates?
Well, I think it's always important to have your historical identity, your cultural identity. But in the long run, I think all of us, no matter what your nationality is, have to make decisions and votes and develop legislation in the best interest of for as many people as we can. And I think most of my colleagues understand that. I'm sure there's some partisanism as it relates to culture and as it relates to political affiliation into if you're tall or if you're short. You know, there's a whole variety of things that plays into what decision making is all about. But I think to the most part, we try to do the best we can with our ideology and our moral compass. But I think it's good to have groups that show the diversity of what we have in our New York State legislature.
You're quite a basketball player, but you're not the tallest guy I ever saw. So that you had to try harder as a basketball player. I know there's a question here somewhere, but does that pull over to politics also?
Oh, without question. But, you know, more than just being an athlete and a basketball player, I like to think I was a team player.
And you were a star.
It's a team sport.
You were a star, weren't you?
Well, I still hold 9 records at Union College, 49 points in one game.
Really?
I still hold the record for the old gymnasium at Albany State, 42 points. And it'll never be broken because they don't play the games in the old gymnasium anymore.
Yeah, right.
So, but, you know, I think what it taught me being involved in athletics is that you can't separate your moral compass from one area to another. My coach has always taught me what you do on this court is reflective of what you do within your family, what you do when you're getting your education, what you do in your public life as well as your private life. And that is why when we talked about Elliot Spitzer, and, you know, I don't think the main reason why he shouldn't be supported for this position is his private life, but I do think it is reflective. You see, because you can't separate the risk-taking that happens, your responsibilities, and segment yourself out and say, well, that will never take place in his public life. It will only take place in his private life. No, we are where we are whenever we do. When you're behind that mic, you're who you are.
So are you a Freudian? In other words, Freud said, character doesn't change after you're 4 years old. Spitzer says he's done with that. He's over that. He apologized. I believe it. What seems to be your problem?
Well, historically, he hasn't changed. I mean, the attacks on me, the attacks on Bruno, the attacks on Wall Street, and some were, granted, were appropriate. They were doing the wrong things, going in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
But here's a man, and this is what bothers me the most about him and Wiener. They're bright. They're intelligent. They're good communicators. They don't need to be bullies. They can win on the bully pulpit. You know, I get things done by marketing my
ideas. Is Wiener a bully? Because, you know, have you heard that?
Well, I've seen him on the floor of Congress just ranting like I've never seen anybody rant before in my life, disparaging people. And that's one of the things we've changed here in the New York State Legislature, and I'm proud of. There's not that personal attack to the level that it used to be in the name calling that we see at the federal level. And as I said, we've moved away from that altered reality that we always have a revenue problem to understanding that, yes, we need revenue, but sometimes it's taxing and spending. We've, as the governor touts, we've got, I think, the lowest tax rate that we've ever had in 57 years. Now, it started out pretty high to begin with, and we have a long way to go. And this is one of the governor's problems right now. He's using a lot of money for media to talk about how effective and efficient and how we're moving forward in New York State. We're still number two in Tax Freedom Day in New York State. You know what Tax Freedom Day means.
Yeah.
That's the day when all of your money doesn't go for local, state, and federal government. You start to take $1 home for yourself. That's May 6th. For 4 months, we pay all our money in taxes to the local, state, and federal government. Only Connecticut goes to May 12th. And as you see, you've seen through the other organizations, we're number one in the worst environment for small businesses. So, you know, we have some work to do in those areas.
Jim, if you wanted to be known for something, you know, when you're done here, what is it that you'd like to say? Yeah, you know, I really like that Jimmy Tedisco because
he told it like it was, because he let his feelings be known on the issues, because under the most difficult of circumstances, being outnumbered 2-1, he got pieces of legislation like saving $50 million going digital, used Resources Accountability Act. He got the governor to change our DMV laws for a 3 strikes and you lose your driving privileges for the rest of your life because there's serial and chronic individuals out there who are cowboys. I'd like to think they talk about the fact that he got one of the first animal cruelty felony bills in the nation passed, the Buster's Law passed, when he was outnumbered 2-1 in terms of affiliations. And he did it by using the character, content, and quality of the idea and doing the marketing necessary. And I'll tell you where I learned that from, and you won't believe this. Early on in my career, I was the chairman of a task force on child abduction and missing children. I was getting on the thruway one day, and I saw they handed out the card for the thruway. It said, buckle up your seatbelt. And I said, why can't we put the pictures of missing kids or missing persons on our New York State transportation system, be the first state in the nation to use our transportation system from here to Syracuse to Buffalo to New York City.
I remember that.
Yep. We called the governor's office that day, and I talked to one of his staff. I never thought he would take it seriously or react to it. He said, I'll get back to you. About an hour later, he called me back. He goes, meet the governor on exit 23 tomorrow. We're printing up the tickets. We've got the first young lady we want to try to put on the thruway toll tickets. I said, who is this? Are you serious about it? He goes, yes. He told me, I don't remember what the fella's name was. So I went to exit 23. There was the governor there on exit 23. They had the picture of the girl on the missing toll ticket. We had a nice press conference. After we got done, I said, governor, tell me something. Why did you... I'm a sophomore legislator. You know, I think it's a good idea. We're going to be the first state in the nation to use our transportation. But why'd you come here with me? Because I know when I get back to the assembly, all the Democrats, because our picture was in the paper the next day, are going to ask me, how'd you get the governor to come to exit 20? He said, Jim, it's the character, content, and quality of an idea that counts. And then he said something I'll never forget. If a public servant doesn't blow his own horn on an issue, there's never any music.
I
came to understand he was saying you have to get a full airing of an idea through the media, through the public, because they're the most powerful sources on getting things done. And ever since then, I've understood you have to market and show the reasons and the logic behind an idea.
And you do it better than anybody in the legislature. Jim Tedisco, we're out of time. Our guest has been New York State Assemblyman Jim Tedisco. I got to say something to you. We may not always agree on substance, but I really love you. And I think you've been a great asset to the state of New York and to your party and to your family, and I want to congratulate you.
Well, it's mutual to you. You've done yeoman's work with this station and enlightened people, and I know they get so much enjoyment off your shows and this station. So congratulations to that.
Thank you.
WAMC.
Thank you, Jimmy. We'll see you all next week on The Capital Connection.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org, and NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decision to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.